All right. Good afternoon. You're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1 p.m. Sorry, that's 1:05. We have our guest, Erin Michael, in the studio today. She is the public health nurse for our area, and we're going to ask her about what services she provides and health trends in Alaska. So call in any time during this program to ask her a question or just say hi. That number is 874-2345. So, Erin, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
Okay, cool. So let's just start off with what are the services that you provide in Wrangell?
Well, we provide different types of services. We provide individual services, meaning we can give services to individual people. So it could include things like immunizations for those that are 29 and under. We can do family planning and pregnancy testing for those that are 29 and under. We also do prenatal and postnatal counseling and outreach. So for moms that have never had a baby, we can meet with them and talk about maybe issues they're concerned about or help answer questions and maybe do referrals if they need to see a specialist. Or we can visit with newborn moms and babies. That's kind of fun where we get to go to home visits and weigh the babies and see how long they are.
Oh, you do home visits?
Yeah. It's
cool.
A lot of fun and get to talk to them about questions they might have. Maybe they're having issues with breastfeeding or postpartum depression, or, you know, they're curious about umbilical cord care or things like that. So that's always a lot of fun to go and do home visits. We do well child exams. So for those that are 7 years or younger, it involves like developmental screenings, physical assessment, hearing and vision screenings. Those are a lot of fun. They take a little bit of time, but they're a lot of fun to do. And then we also do things like TB screening and treatment, TB meaning tuberculosis, because there still is tuberculosis in Alaska. So we do provide screening for that. And also, if somebody's a positive, we can get medication for them and treatment for that. We also do different school screenings. So if a school is interested in maybe having hearing and vision screenings done, they used to do tuberculosis screenings with the schools, but nowadays it's a risk-based assessment, so they fill out questionnaires, and if somebody's at risk for tuberculosis, then they get a TB test done. But back in the day, they used to do the little poke for everybody, but we don't have to do that anymore, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
And then we also do STD testing and treatment, so for sexually transmitted diseases, infections, we do that. So those are kind of the individual kind of services we provide. And then we also do a lot of community stuff. So we work on different levels at the community, one-on-one with people, and then in a larger community as a whole.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into the community stuff, can you give me a sense of, like, you mentioned that some of these services are offered to people based on their age. Does income come into that?
Income, we do work with what we call a sliding fee scale. So we can offer services, and based on people's incomes, then it may go all the way down to $0 depending on, you know, where their income is. And then we never turn anyone away based on their ability to pay. So even if somebody's, you know, said they made $100,000 a year, but maybe it's all tied up in a fishing boat, if they said they needed services, we would still provide them for them. And we would never turn anyone away based on that. So.
Oh, wow. And then give me a sense of how often you're in Wrangell, you know, what's the traffic like for you when you come to town?
Okay, so I come to Wrangell typically the second Tuesday that week. I'm always here for a special meeting. I'm here for a Healthy Wrangell Coalition meeting, which is always the second Tuesday of every month. So I usually come in on a Monday, and I usually leave on a Wednesday. And I'll see people when I get off the jet. Like yesterday, I had several clients right after I got off the jet. And then I have clients throughout the day. And then I'll see people if I need to before I leave on the next jet. Ideally, I like to make appointments just because it allows me to know what supplies to bring over, especially for vaccines, because we don't keep vaccines here because there's not somebody here all the time. It lets me know what I need to bring over. But I always bring equipment with me, like the STD testing and birth control and Plan B with me, just in case somebody spontaneously stops by. Then I've got that supplies available, so I can help them while I'm here.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
then, yeah, let's Let's go ahead and talk about those community-based services.
Sure. So community-based services are going to be things that are a little bit broader. So I might be doing infectious disease investigations. I might say there is a rash of a whole bunch of people coming down with a foodborne illness. Then I might be doing interviews to try to determine with those people to try to determine where potentially they might have come in contact with that infectious disease. Like if it's Giardia because they all, you know, got water from the same stream at a party.
Oh, wow.
Or, you know, I'm sure you guys have probably heard about the romaine
yes.
lettuce, kind of similar to that, where we're always checking to see potentially where people might have been exposed. So we work on disease investigation. We work in conjunction with the section of epidemiology, and it's really fun. It's kind of a mystery. You get to do interviews and find out where potentially people might have been exposed to different things so that we can help prevent others from getting exposed to it, too. We do a lot of community assessments with other organizations. So we might be working with a hospital at a given time. They have to do, as part of their licensing, they have to do a community assessment for their community every mm-hmm. so many years. So we may be working with them and helping them on our part of it, what public health does, so that they can include that in their plan. We just are getting ready to finish a community assessment on obesity prevention and healthy lifestyle for Brangle and Petersburg.
Oh, wow.
And so hopefully that will be coming out and we can share that with the community, showing what's available. It's really neat to kind of see all the different services that are available because a lot of people don't know, you have Parks and Rec, but do you know that you have this also? We have this running club. It's kind of nice to put it all together so that people can look at the big picture and say, hey, we're pretty lucky and we can do things to help stay active and reduce the obesity rate. So lots of different community assessments are continually going on at any given community. I know this summer we're also going to be working on a STD, STI community assessment.
Oh, wow.
To see,
great.
You know, what services are available in Wrangell, what can we do better to help out those that want to prevent an STD or an STI. So that's going to hopefully be starting up this summer, so.
And so when it starts up this summer, yeah, you're going to be doing the assessment. So mm-hmm. you're going to be doing interviews.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And mainly with organizations in town, healthcare providers to start off with, to see what they're doing, because you have to find out what they're doing, how they're testing, what they're providing before you can see if there are any gaps. So.
Okay. This is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. If you're just now tuning in, we're talking with Erin. She's our public health nurse for Wrangell and Petersburg. And you can give us a call. That number is 874-2345. We're going to go on a short break. But if you have any questions, medical questions, public health questions, give us a ring. Again, that number is 874-2345. All right, we are back. Erin Michael is our guest in the studio today. She is the public health nurse for Wrangell and Petersburg. And she comes in a couple of days out of the month to provide services around STD screening, immunizations, and all kinds of other things. But we were also talking about these kind of larger community-based projects. So, you know, Erin said that she's going to be doing some assessments around STDs in Wrangell and Petersburg area, that you all have been doing assessments around obesity in the area. And yeah, just give us a sense of what other community-based health services you all provide or are involved in.
One of the big things that we are always working on and will continue to work on is emergency preparedness. It's just something that we do. It's something that you can't ever not be too prepared for. So we have been working with the hospital, and also we've recently had an exercise this past fall where we provided free flu shots to anybody that would like them. And it just kind of lets us practice giving a medication, whether it be a vaccine or a pill, to a large group of people in a quick amount of time so that you can kind of see how the flow goes. In the event that, say, there was anthrax that was in Wrangell, unlikely to happen, but if it did happen, at least we would have a practice session or multiple sessions to see how things go. So a lot of our community stuff is involved with working with the local LEPC, local emergency planning committee, working with the local hospital and the local clinics, trying to participate whenever they have events.
Okay.
If they have mass casualty things, and I know far enough in advance, then I usually try to either be observer or participant.
Yes.
And that's a lot of fun. If you've never had the chance to do that, I highly recommend doing it. You don't have to be a medical professional. A lot of times they'll put you in makeup and you get to see the whole process of what would happen if there was something traumatic in town. So we do a lot of emergency preparedness, community activities. We also work with the health fair, which you guys have, I think, the best health fair that I've been to in Alaska.
Wow, thanks.
and I have to say that Wrangell people are more into their health fair than anybody I've ever seen. And they take the time to talk to each vendor and find out the information. I've been to quite a few health fairs across the state, and that's not the case in a lot of communities, so I think that's really special about Wrangell, and I appreciate that people are interested in their health and take it seriously. And
I see what you're saying.
It's great. So this last health fair, we did a booth on mumps because there have been mumps in Alaska, and so we provided information on what it looks like, how to get checked to see if you are up to date on your immunizations, and what to do if you're not up to date. So, and we put out PSAs just to make sure people knew, hey, you can check your vaccine records, and if you don't have a record of it, then you need to make sure that you've gotten the MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, just so that you don't come out with the mumps. So letting people know about those kind of things community-wide, the radio station's key in for public health, I think, and and preparedness in general for Southeast Alaska.
Preparedness, so, for sure.
Yeah, so we really appreciate and think it's a vital part of our community. So thank you, guys. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
We also do a lot of health education, so we'll go in the community and get asked to speak about different topics. So I might be asked to go and do like a hand washing class with the different school kids.
Hand washing?
Yes, hand washing is very important for prevention. And we have something called the glitter bug. It's this ultraviolet, it looks like a big purple bug, and the kids put this lotion on their hands, and then it's supposed to mimic what germs look like on your hands. And they look at it, and then they got to go wash their hands, and we see how well they actually wash their hands.
Oh my gosh.
And actually, the hospital in Petersburg will borrow our glitter bug and do it with their staff, just to show the staff at some places, because even for people, adults, you know, sometimes we miss certain parts of our hands, particularly the back of our hands, or maybe where our rings are, things like that. So we provide health education on request, as long as we know a topic that people are interested in, and if it's appropriate, obviously, you know, if it's on fishing boats or something like that, I can't talk about that. But if it's anything in the health realm, then as long as I know ahead of time, then I'm happy to talk about it with people. I go to like the Forest Service, you name it, I can go to it. And I've talked about like pain medication, because a lot of like the Forest Service people, they're out, you know, working hard on their bodies. So yeah, that's a lot of fun things to do, is the education part of it. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So you are just anywhere in the community that you can be at where people need some health education.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like just a couple minutes ago, I just got back from the Healthy Wrangell Coalition meeting, which is a great coalition here in Wrangell, that is all these different entities in Wrangell. That includes like the school district and search and the medical center and AICS and all these different entities. And once a month, they get together and talk about what they're doing, what services they're providing, any special events or any programs or things like that. And I really enjoy going to that because it helps me know the community better, since I'm only here once a month. It gives me a better picture of what's happening in Wrangell. So I participate in things like that. I also participate in different coalitions. So I'm on the Smoking Cessation Coalition, and I work with BRAVE, which is the Domestic Violence Prevention Group here in town. So I try to get involved in anything that public health would be touching in some form, as much as possible, which is great.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love this idea of public health, and I love that you are, you know, you're seeing your patients when you're here, but by going out to these coalitions, by going out to the school, by engaging with the even the domestic violence volunteers here, it just gives us a sense that health is so much more than one person walking into a doctor's office and walking out.
for sure.
So give me a sense of, like, you know, what is public health to you?
So public health to me is, it's the individual, it's the community, it's everybody. Everything touches public health. One of my favorite things I ever saw for a public health campaign was a sticker that they put everywhere where public health touched. And literally the stickers were all over the town. Because if your drinking water is not good, then that's going to affect your health. If you've got noise pollution, then that's going to affect mental health, sleeping patterns. I mean, everything around you impacts your health. It's so multi-layered. So it's just really important to realize that we have to take care of ourselves and as a community, not just individuals, but think about everybody else around us. And to me, that's public health.
Yeah. And so, you know, as a community, we think about that by, like, what are, like you mentioned, the environmental factors that we all deal with every day. Mm-hmm. But then it's also, you know, knowing that there's an outbreak, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, there's an outbreak of something, people need to be more aware mm-hmm. and to protect themselves and to protect other people down the line.
Definitely. I mean, something as simple as hand washing, just making sure, I know it seems really, really, really simple, but it's one of the key things to help protect everyone around us. Making sure that our food is safe, you know, that we have nutritious food, which is can be challenging here. I mean, it's so expensive to get food up here on the barges and affordable. That's another challenge. So being an advocate for healthy food that's affordable, healthy activities that people can do that don't cost a lot.
Yeah.
All of these things are just critical in making sure that the community as a whole is better.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I love that. Okay. If you're just now tuning in, our guest is Erin Michael. She is the public health nurse for Wrangell as well as Petersburg. Please give us a call if you have any questions for her. She knows a lot about what's going on around town with all things having to do with health. So it would be a good time to call in with some questions and find out a little bit more about your community. So that number is 874-2345. We will go on a short break. All right, everybody, we are back with the public health nurse. Her name is Erin, and we've got some more questions for her. So, you know, when we talk about public health, that means not just the health of one individual that you're providing care for, but for the whole community. So I think it would be great if you could just give us a sense of what are the health concerns that you are seeing in Southeast Alaska.
Sure. Very similar to a lot of the rest of the country. We see, of course, like I said, obesity. That is one of the issues that we face everywhere. And that, unfortunately, is... it's a tough one because you have to work on multiple fronts and you have to do it early, making sure you're keeping your TV time to less than 2 hours or screen time, making sure good physical activity, good nutrition. So that's one of the ones I see here in Southeast Alaska. And also in Alaska, we have the highest rates of chlamydia. We've had the highest rates of chlamydia, which is an STD, for years and years and years now. So it's a smaller dating pool here, so the chances of being exposed, because people always ask, well, why is it higher here? It's a smaller dating pool. People may be having a little bit riskier behaviors. They might not be using condoms, maybe having multiple partners or anonymous partners. So we really do encourage that people use condoms, and if they are having multiple partners or anonymous partners, to get screened appropriately at least every couple months.
Really?
If you're in a relationship where you're each other's only partners, then once a year is usually okay, as long as you both have tested and you're both negative. But we do see STDs as an issue for sure in Alaska. Not just chlamydia, there's also gonorrhea, there has been syphilis, and even HIV. So it's something to consider. And then, of course, there's been a big push from the governor and across the nation, too, not just here, about opioids and opioid abuse. So we're trying to let people know that they can get free Narcan kits. That's the spray to help reverse the respiratory depression that can happen when somebody overdoses from an opioid, and they're free. You can get up to 3 at a time, and anybody can get it that's 18 or older.
And where can they get it?
They can get it at public health, or they can also get it at AICS.
Okay.
And the medical center also.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you know if like the police are carrying it, or you know other kind of community outlets?
I know that they are interested in it. I don't know that they have started carrying it yet here. I know in Petersburg they have. Mm-hmm. It does require a small amount of training. It's like mm-hmm. a 5-minute thing where we show you how to use it, how to put it up somebody's nose and press the plunger, and what the signs of an overdose are, and what to do. You always want to call 911 and get emergency responders there, because sometimes people can have multiple drugs on board, not just an opioid, and the Narcan only will stop an opioid overdose.
I see.
We want to get help and so that they can get further treatment. Opioids, I think, is no matter where you go in Southeast Alaska, is an issue. Not just that, there's also other substance abuse issues like alcohol. That's something that we see a lot of. Those are some of the main ones that I've seen in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Brave, which is an organization locally dealing with domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's something that happens everywhere for sure. But I'm interested in how public health is kind of involved in that.
So one of the key priorities that we focus on as public health nursing is domestic violence prevention. So in any form. So that could be something that's happened to somebody years ago or something that's currently happening. So our job is to be screening and referring. So any client we see, if it's appropriate for us to ask, we're always asking about domestic violence in their past or currently. And then we can do a referral to an agency like Brave. Or Wish in Ketchikan if they need to be in a shelter, or Aware in Juneau. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they need to get an emergency transport out of a community for their safety. Mm-hmm. So we'll refer them to get that assistance.
Okay.
We're not the ones that are actually doing the referral, as far as we don't make the transportation plans or anything like that at Public Health. We would refer them to like Brave or Wish or Aware or different organizations that's their main focus. And then in some places, some public health nurses are actual advocates, where they might be the one to answer the phone. Because I split between two communities, I don't do that because I'm just mm-hmm. not in one community long enough to be on call like that.
Yes.
But we also, you may be part of a board, like in Petersburg and here in Wrangell too, I'm part of a board where we help support, you know, prevention activities. So we may help with fundraising, or we may help with, I don't know if they do Girls on the Run here or not yet.
They used to.
But, you know, finding things that help prevent young people from even getting in the situation beforehand is really key to helping stop domestic violence later in life, where you build positive role models for boys and girls so that they don't have that feeling like they need to do that in response to a situation later on in life. So, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, preventative work is amazing. It's good. And I'm sure it feels good to be in that role.
Yeah, for sure. I really, really like it a lot. So I feel like it's one of the most important things we can do for our community. So
yeah, I'm right there with you. What else? We talked about trends that we're seeing. Let's just talk real quick before we go to break about how this is obviously a state-funded operation. Mm-hmm. And there was a point when Wrangell had, you know, our own nurse that was here, and you weren't split between, you know, two communities. Mm-hmm. Give us just a sense of, you know, why that's happened and maybe what to expect.
Sure. So a couple of years ago, because of oil revenues, the state budget was drastically reduced, and public health nursing was reduced quite a bit. And they looked at communities in particular that had multiple resources. So Wrangell luckily does have AICS, which is a federally qualified health center that does provide sliding fee scale services. Mm-hmm. And so unfortunately Wrangell was looked at, and they decided that it could sustain a cut where other communities couldn't. because they had to reduce the number of staff because we just didn't receive enough funding from the budget. They decided that, I think it was like three or four health centers that ended up closing. It was probably back in 2016, not closing, but not having a full-time public health nurse station there. So at that point, they looked at communities that could potentially still provide services, but just not have someone there full-time. Mm-hmm. And so because Petersburg is so close to Wrangell, they asked if I would be willing to take on Wrangell. And I said yes, because I think it's a really great community, and I love coming over here and meeting everybody and working with them. So that's what happened with the funding and why we lost that nursing position here.
Absolutely. Yeah, which, you know, it's a bummer, but we would really be remiss to not have you come over here at all. So thankfully, we can have you over here.
Yeah, yeah. And I really encourage people to talk to their legislature if they're concerned about that at all, because that's how things change funding-wise, is if they hear from people. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'll say that again. If you want more public health funding, talk to your representatives. So we are going to go to break real quick. When we come back, I think we're going to talk a lot more about sexual health. That means birth control. It means STD screenings. So I really encourage anybody listening to call with your questions. I know we're all adults. We feel like we know everything, but that's not necessarily the case. So now is a really good time to have your questions answered. We'll go to break, and you can call us at 874-2345. All right, if you're just now tuning in, you're listening to Talk on the Rock, your local live call-in show. The time is 1:38. We have our guest, Erin Michael, in the studio today. She's Wrangell's public health nurse. She's also in Petersburg when she's not here. And so we've got some questions. So these are my questions, but I feel like there are probably folks in the community that have these same questions. So feel free to call in anytime, 874-2345, if you have, questions or comments, but we'll mention some right now. So, So around STD screenings. So I feel like every time I go to the doctor, it's always different. How often should we be getting screened?
Well, as I said, if you're sexually active, at least once a year, you need to be getting a gonorrhea, chlamydia, and an HIV screen. Gonorrhea, chlamydia doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a blood draw. So if you're needle phobic, you can pee, or you can provide a throat swab or vaginal swab, rectal swab if you're having rectal sex. Depends on what type of sex you're having, what type of testing you need to have done. But at least once a year, the gonorrhea, chlamydia, and then HIV. HIV, depending on where you are, here, I'm not sure if AICS has a throat swab one or not. I don't have that as an availability. I would have to do a blood draw if I wanted to do HIV testing for someone. Mm-hmm. But there's other testings that you need to get done, too. You might want to get checked for syphilis or herpes. If you're using IV drugs, or mm-hmm. if you're a baby boomer or older, mm-hmm. Then you need to be checked for hepatitis C.
Yes.
So those are the main ones we usually look out for. And then I don't know if I mentioned herpes simplex 1 and 2.
No, tell me.
But that's a blood test that a lot of times people will not necessarily have symptoms for a very long time. So it's always a good idea to get a baseline for that one. I tell people, you know, get checked for that because you could potentially be spreading STDs for a lot of these people. And not know you have them. In fact, chlamydia is the one that's called the silent STD. So a lot of people have it for a really long time and never know because they don't show any signs or symptoms.
Okay. Absolutely.
And this is for guys and girls too, because a lot of times women will go in and get testing with their well woman's exam, like their annual exam. But guys don't necessarily have something like that. And so mm-hmm. they think, oh, you know, as long as I'm not having symptoms, I'm okay. But guys really should be getting checked annually also. And then if you're more at high risk, meaning multiple partners mm-hmm. or anonymous partners mm-hmm. or men having sex with men, these are a little bit higher risk mm-hmm. for catching an STD.
Yes.
So we would encourage them to go a little more often, maybe depending on how many partners or what their risks are. It may be like every couple months that they get tested.
Exactly. Okay. So you're saying once a year is for... That would be somebody that's sexually active that is has one monogamous partner.
Yeah, pretty low risk, yeah.
That would be low risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're anybody else...
You're saying, might as well go once a year, even in that scenario.
At least.
Okay, good.
Because you don't know what your partner is doing. And as I said, a lot of these STDs, you can have no symptoms at all and be carrying them, so.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you so much. I definitely have been under the impression that you only go to get a screening if you have symptoms. And if you only have one partner, maybe you wouldn't ever go.
Yeah.
But you're saying there's plenty of reasons why you should be.
Definitely.
Yeah. So some symptoms are silent and then.
Sometimes they'll show up, but I wouldn't wait till they show up. I would get it taken care of before then. Because a lot of times with some of the STDs, by the time you're showing symptoms, it may have moved up the reproductive tract. It can cause issues like infertility later on in life.
Oh, yeah.
So we just want to make sure that people get it checked as often as they appropriately should. So
like chlamydia, you know, when I think of that, I don't think of it as being a very severe disease.
If you wait long enough.
But if you wait long enough, then something can go wrong.
Yeah, it can, like I said, move up the reproductive tract. For guys, it can cause a swelling in the epididymis, in the scrotal sac, and it can cause infertility for them. For women, it can move up into the fallopian tubes and cause scarring and infertility later on. So, yeah, we just don't want to get to that point. So I just encourage people, be smart and get checked as often as you're needing to. So
absolutely.
And at least once a year. If you're sexually active.
At least once a year, more if you're having more partners, mm-hmm. and certainly whenever you have a symptom.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And let's see. Oh, what are some trends you're seeing in contraception? So it seems like over the years, certain things have came into consciousness and then they phased out, mm-hmm. like the diaphragm.
Yeah.
Things like
you don't really see the diaphragm anymore.
Yeah. I always wonder why, too.
Ease of use and effectiveness. Right now, what I'm seeing, particularly with the younger people, a lot of people are liking what they call LARCs, which is long-acting contraceptives.
Oh.
They're things like an implant that will go in your arm or an IUD that goes into the uterus. And they last for a really long time, so you don't have to think about it. It's kind of no-brainer birth control. You get it placed, and it's good for several years, and sometimes up to like 10 years plus, depending on what kind you have. And they're very effective. So I'm seeing a lot of younger people really leaning towards that because of the ease of it. And then I see a lot of people use the shot for women, which is they get a shot every 3 months, and it protects them against unintended pregnancies. And then there's the pill. There's still the pill. Unfortunately, it's just still for women. I know I keep hearing rumors about the pill for guys.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
So far, that hasn't made it to the market yet. But those are the main ones I see. There are things like the patch or the ring. And some people use them, but it does require a little bit more adeptness with your birth control. It requires a little bit more hands-on versus, like I said, a LARC where you just have an IUD and it automatically takes care of the birth control for you. You don't have to really think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Should people... Are there any concerns about those long-term birth control methods?
You know, they're reasonably safe, but some people that have high risk for blood clots need to be cautious with certain types of birth control with hormones in them. So they might go for like the copper IUD because it doesn't have hormones.
Okay, absolutely.
So that can be a nice option for women that are breastfeeding or for women that may be at high risk for blood clots.
Yeah, if you're a smoker.
Yeah, if you're a smoker or if you're overweight. Mm-hmm. All those things that can put you at a little bit higher risk, you have to be cautious with the hormonal birth controls.
Okay. And as far as non-hormonal goes, Yeah, the copper IUD. Yeah.
Or you got condoms.
Condoms.
I mean, you can go into things like withdrawal or fertility planning, but they're not as effective. And, you know, it's kind of like one in four that use the withdrawal method can become pregnant in that year using that withdrawal method. So you just, you know, you have to take into effect, okay, do I want to take a one in four chance that I might become pregnant when I don't want to? Or do you pick a more secure birth control? It just depends on what you want for your birth control method.
Exactly. One in four chance, that's 75% is not exactly there. All right. It sounds like we have a caller on the line. Hello. Introduce yourself.
No caller. Oh. Just a question.
Oh.
They don't want to be on air. I have a question.
Sorry. We have a question. Hi, sorry for that abrupt break. So we did get a caller, but they just sent us their question, so I'm going to read it for them. And the question is, what advice would you give to parents and teachers who have kids that are in the school system where abstinence-only education is what they are taught? So where there really is not sex ed. It's just abstinence-only education.
Okay, well, there's really, really good resources out there. I, in particular, love a couple of websites. There's one called Scarlet Teen. So if you go Google Scarlet Teen or bedsider.org, they have wonderful educational material that's all science-based, evidence-based, so you're not going to get the myths or the misconceptions. And I actually use a lot of their handouts in the clinic myself to explain the birth control or to explain about STDs, because they're written in a way that it's understandable for a teen to read, and gives them, you know, clear-cut, honest answers. So that they have a place to go to talk about this, and they have like a question section and they can type in questions. And it's kind of interesting, especially on Scarlet Teen, to see some of the questions, because these things don't always occur to me because I'm not in the teen brain right now. But at one point, I'm sure I obviously was.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, if you're looking for resources, I would start there at Scarlet Teen and bedsider.org. Because I think that by far they are the best out there right now. And just, you know, being comfortable and honest and telling them that this is, you know, a part of every human. You know, sexuality is normal. And just being, letting them know that it's safe to talk to you or to talk to an adult that, you know, they feel is a responsible, safe adult. They're also welcome to come and talk to me when I'm in town. I don't mind that at all. In fact, I have a lot of moms come in with their daughters and they come together and talk.
Oh, wow.
Which I really like. I think that's really special that, you know, they have that safety and comfortableness with and ease with each other that they can come in and talk about birth control and STDs together. I think that not all teens are as lucky. I fully support anybody that wants to talk to me. I'm happy to talk about these topics with them. But I think for adults that are concerned that their teens aren't getting that, those are some great resources to go to. So, yeah.
Awesome. Perfect.
Sure.
Scarlet Teen.
Yeah. And bedsider.org.
Bedsider.org.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. That sounds great. Anonymous caller, thank you so much. I thought that was a really good question. And I just have one more other question kind of on this topic is, Plan B, you know, living in Alaska, living in Wrangell, do we have access to Plan B?
You do. You can get it up at AICS / search. I know that they're kind of in transition. I don't know if they're called search yet or not, but you can get it there. You can get it at the Public Health Center when I'm in town. But otherwise, you can get it off of Amazon. You can just order it like you would,
what?
You know, some shoes or anything else.
Really?
So if you're not comfortable going to the Public Health Center or going to AICS / search, then just go on Amazon and order it and get it ahead of time if you're concerned that maybe you might have some unexpected sex and need the Plan B for it. So something to keep aware of with Plan B is it's meant for those that have a normal BMI, meaning body mass index. So if you are over your normal BMI or overweight, then you would need to get something called Ella instead. It's more effective than Plan B. So just keep that in mind if your BMI is above normal range. I just always like to warn people because they may not have heard about that yet. But it works similar to Plan B, but it's just more effective for those that are overweight.
Absolutely. And
I don't believe that's available on Amazon, unfortunately.
Okay. And yeah, so when I go to, you know, AICS, can they just give it to me there? Do I have to have a doctor's appointment?
You probably would have to see somebody for that, I would imagine. I'm not their clinic, so I don't know their procedures. Okay. But like for us.
For you all. Yeah.
Like I couldn't just hand somebody a Plan B if they walked in. They would need to come in and I'd need to see them and counsel them and probably do a pregnancy check to make sure they're not already pregnant. Because ideally you don't want to take Plan B if you're already pregnant.
If you're already pregnant.
Yeah. So, Plan B needs to be taken within 5 days of unprotected sex.
It wouldn't show up in the test.
Yeah, no. I mean, but like if it was a pregnancy from before that even. Sometimes people have unprotected sex multiple times. And so, you know, they might have had unprotected sex a month ago and gotten pregnant. And then they thought, oh, they had another unprotected episode. So they come in to get Plan B. We just want to make sure we're not giving them that.
I see.
Yeah, while they're pregnant. So.
Okay.
I would imagine that they would probably have to do something similar like that up at AICS. So.
Absolutely.
But I, as I said, you'd have to call and talk to them for their procedure. But,
okay.
Yeah. It doesn't take very long as far as for me with an appointment for Plan B, probably maybe 15 minutes of that. And that includes some paperwork and some counseling. So
nice. Yeah. Awesome.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And like I said, you want to take it sooner versus later from unprotected sex.
So yeah, what is the window again?
5 days, but ideally the earlier the better.
Yes.
As far as how effective it is. So like if you had unprotected sex last night, come in and see me the next morning and I can get it to you. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Versus like wait until the fifth day.
Yeah.
It may not work as well for you, so.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then also just so people know there are condoms available. There's a dispenser right outside the public health center across the hall. And we try to keep that filled up. If I'm not going to be in town, I usually will send some and somebody will fill that up if they see it get empty. So we try to have that available and it's during normal business hours. So
okay.
You can stop by and get them. And
so it's in the Caden building.
Yeah, downstairs, literally right across from the health center along the wall by the water fountain. So
by the water fountain.
And it's pretty anonymous. People can't really see who's going in there because there's like windows, but they're all like blindfolded and stuff like that. So don't be shy. If you feel like you need it, you can go and get them. We would just ask that you not take all the condoms at once, you know, leave some for other people.
Yeah.
But yeah, feel free to get them if you need them. So
good.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, I think maybe let's go to a short break, see if anybody calls again. And if not, we will kind of wrap up. So everybody, you're listening to Talk on the Rock, KSDK's local live call-in show. The time is 1:54. We've had Aaron in the studio for quite a while talking about stuff that's really important for all of us as individuals and all of us that live in our community and hang out in our community. So we'll go to break real quick and then we'll be back. All right, everybody, you're listening to Talk on the Rock, KSDK's local live call-in show. The time is 1:57. We have Erin Michael. She is our public health nurse in Wrangell. So I feel like we had a good talk today. So thanks for coming in. And I don't know, is there anything else that you would like to tell the lovely people of Wrangell while you're here?
Just feel free to stop by and see me anytime that I'm here. I usually will put the flyers up in the building, Caden building, and then the grocery stores and the pharmacy. And if you have questions and I'm not here, feel free to call me over in Petersburg and I'll give you that number. It's 772-4611. And you can look it up online too. It's on there. So even if I'm not in town and you have questions or you're needing something, don't hesitate to give me a call. And if you hear of an event that you think would be important for public health to be involved in, then let me know, because I'd be happy to try to arrange travel to come over. Like, I've come over before for special meetings or events beyond just my normal monthly trip, because I love coming over here. It's a great community, and it's really special, and the people are wonderful and friendly. And yeah, thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here and for doing the work that you do, and not just hanging out in Petersburg. I'm glad we can have you here sometimes, too. Oh,
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. You have been listening to Talk on the Rock, KSTK's local live call-in show. We will be back next Tuesday, as we do every Tuesday at 1 p.m. with a guest. So, see you later.